be able to say, even the sparrows, I am now homeless. Is my eyesight fading, or am I just wrong? Am I going to get rheumatism? Lockjaw? Dementia? Finally, I saw that worry had come to me and gave it up. I took my own body and went out into the morning and sighed. Louis Thomas said, we are perhaps uniquely among the earth's creatures, the worrying man. Today, we are going to continue our series, Our World, where the topics of the series are topics that you listed about a year ago now that you would like addressed, and faith perspective given to things that you struggle with or want more information on or want a context of faith within which to put it. And today, the topic is anxiety. And throughout this series, we have kind of some guidelines, but it's an intense series about topics that mean a lot to us. So we make this covenant to agree to disagree and to value people over opinions. We remind ourselves that relationships matter. Everyone is a child of God, and we're going to strive to create an open space here where everyone is comfortable in expressing their views. If you don't understand something or what somebody is saying, ask for clarifying questions. Divide statements, try to speak from your own perspective, and try to share your thoughts and feelings in a way that expresses your ideas without trying to convince someone else that they are right or wrong. Try to the degree you can to stay open to new ideas and listen for bridges of understanding. We want to encourage people here to ask tough questions, and we'll seek to always create an environment where people feel comfortable and safe to ask those questions. Every once in a while, somebody will come to me after gathering and say, I don't really look too really safe, but I think, you know, I think that this thing that kind of shut me down. We need to learn how to do this together, and it's not an easy thing to always do. We're going to wait for the microphone because we want to build some space between what people say, to give people kind of a moment to take it in, and also to ensure that everybody can hear what is being said. So on to anxiety. Our age that we live in today has been called the age of anxiety. Perhaps because many have lost any sense of where their foundation is. The world and our worldview seems to keep being redefined every few months, and that really makes many people anxious. And most of us want rid of that anxiety that we feel as quick as possible. So we're going to talk about anxiety. I love this part. My anxieties have anxieties. Define anxiety for me, and this we probably won't need the mic for. Just tell me, and I'll repeat it, but just a word or two. Define anxiety for me. Anxiety.
Stress.
Stress. Threat. Worry.
Fear.
Nightmare. Uncertainty.
Lack of hope.
Anxiety. When you think of things that make you anxious, how would you define anxiety? Like, think about public speaking. Sometimes anxiety is apprehension, right? It's like thinking of that thing that is going to come. What else? Anxiety, anxiety, anxiety.
Not having control.
Not having control, right?
Nervous.
That's a great one. Nervousness. Nervous. What else? There's unease in anxiety, right? We feel a sense of unease.
Careful.
Terrified. Terrified, okay. What are the words that define anxiety for you? Lack of clarity.
Irrational.
Insomnia. Well, these are things that anxiety can certainly cause. I want to give you a few facts about anxiety as we begin this conversation. Anxiety disorders are the most common mental illness in the United States. Do you all know that? Over 40 million American adults are
time of life is worth 3 million. Think about that. It's a lot of money. Women are twice as likely as men to develop PTSD, which is post-traumatic stress disorder, which is really interesting because we often think of PTSD around war and battle, and we tend to think of men, but women are actually twice as likely. 40% of American adults have experienced an anxiety or disorder at some point in their life. Why are they 10? Think about that. Why are they 10? Only a third of adults suffering from anxiety disorders receive treatment. So that means we have a lot of people suffering silently. And only a fifth of teenagers suffering anxiety disorders receive treatment. Anxiety disorders are estimated to cost American society over $42 billion a year. So this is an epidemic, right? This is something that is very serious for us as a culture. So it's no wonder that this was one of the topics that came up all the time to talk about. So when we talk about anxiety this morning, I do want to distinguish before we get into this conversation. There's five very common anxiety disorders, and that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the common anxiety that affects all of us. But I want to identify these five common anxiety disorders because I think a nervous disorder is characterized by this one. The difference between anxiety and an anxiety disorder, let's say, is that it's characterized by a state of excessive uneasiness and apprehension, typically with compulsive behaviors or panic attacks when it becomes a disorder. And it should receive, if you are a person, and many of you are, because I know that for a fact, suffering from this, of a doctor or a therapist or a medical professional. Each has its own set of symptoms. So let's start with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. How many have seen the movie As Good As It Gets? That's a really good illustration of OCD. You have periods of obsession, like you just feel like your pants can never get clean, so you wash and wash and wash and wash and wash and wash. Or you obsess over something, like, did I turn the stove off? So you go back to check it multiple times because you are concerned about that. And that obsession is complemented by a compulsion, and that's to get rid of the obsession. So you compulsively do something to get rid of what you're obsessing about, i.e., if you're that person that's afraid of germs and always washing your hands, you ritualistically wash your hands. Or if you are always concerned about obsessing over, did I turn the stove off? You are going to compulsively go back because you can't rest until you've gone back and checked the stove, 100 times. Some of you are shaking your heads like, yes, that is. So OCD. Another one of the five common anxiety disorders is generalized anxiety disorder. And this really is very helpful. I just know he's thinking that I don't know what to say, and I'm totally with that. Like, that's how the brain is working when you're dealing with it. So, everyday anxiety, I think this is really helpful for us to know, are we, like, crossing the border? You worry about paying the bills, landing a job, a romantic breakup, or other important events, versus an anxiety disorder, constant and unsubstantiated worry that causes significant distress and interferes with your daily life. Over here, everyday anxiety, meaning that this is kind of the stuff that all of us face. Embarrassment or self-consciousness in an uncomfortable or awkward social situation versus you avoid social situations for fear of being judged, embarrassed, or humiliated. Do you see the difference between these two? One just crosses a line and goes over. Everyday anxiety, pace of nerves or sweating before a big test, business presentation, stage performance, or other significant event versus seemingly out of the blue panic attacks and the preoccupation with the fear of having another one. Everyday anxiety, realistic fear of a dangerous object, place, or situation versus an irrational fear or avoidance of an object, place, or situation that poses little or no threat of danger. Everyday anxiety, sadness, or difficulty sleeping immediately after a traumatic event versus recurring nightmares, flashbacks, or emotional numbing related to a traumatic event that occurred several months or years before. So there's kind of a line between generalized anxiety disorder and a person who just has kind of natural anxiety that's a part of being human. A third common anxiety disorder is social anxiety disorder. Panic attacks related to social situations, public speaking, stage fright, fear of being around others. So there's this worrying about everything all the time, which is what most people think of social anxiety. But what it really feels like for the person going through it is sweating a lot, second guessing yourself, muscle tension, trouble sleeping, chest pain, overthinking things, increased heart rate, your mind and body refusing to cooperate no matter what you know is rational. Social anxiety disorder. And then panic disorder. That's when you get these panic attacks where your heart palpitates and you have this racing pulse and intense fear and feeling of helplessness, and everything seems very out of control and there is no rhyme nor reason. That's the next slide. This one. There's a panic attack. A billion thoughts, none of them helpful, all of the feeling all at once. Forget how blinking works. Invisible hippopotamus sitting on your chest. Face flush with pale. 90% sure this is an actual heart attack. Your stomach feels like two measles wrestling. Hands are cold or sweaty or both. Your knees are either locked or wobbly. You don't even ask what's going on. And then last of panic disorders is PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. It's the result of a traumatic event or a series of events, flashbacks, night terrors, even phobias. And I put this up just so that you know, for men, the most common reason for PTSD is rape, combat exposure, childhood neglect, or childhood physical abuse, where for women, it is rape, sexual molestation, physical attack, and being threatened with a weapon. So these are the kinds of things that cause PTSD for people. Important for all of us to remember is that the sufferer of these kinds of anxiety disorders are not in need of our judgment, but they are in need of our help and acceptance. That this is just the way life is to them. And to say to a person who is going through this, don't feel panic, don't feel anxiety, it's just like pouring gasoline on a flare, you know, because it's not going to be helpful. So we're going to talk today a little bit about anxiety now. It's just the normal anxiety that you and I have. We want to look and begin this conversation with a faith perspective. So let's read together this text. I'm going to put these photos down for a second. You can't worship. You can read it. Do that at once. Loving one God, you'll end up hating the other. Adoration of one means contempt for the other. You can't worship God and be loving God. If you decide for God, living a life of God worship, it follows that you don't fuss about what's on the table at mealtimes, or whether the clothes in your closet aren't fresh. There is far more to your life than the food you put in your stomach, more to your outer appearance than the clothes you have in your body. Look at the birds, trees, and unfettered, not trying them out to God's position. Careless to the care of God, and you have far more to him than birds. Has anyone, by fussing in front of the mirror, ever gotten taller by someone who's diminished? All this time and money wasted on fashion. Do you think it makes that much difference? Instead of looking at the fashion, walk right into the fields and look at the wildflowers. They never print or shop, but have you ever seen color and design quite like it? The 10 best dressed men and women in the country look shabby alongside them. If God gives such attention to the appearance of wildflowers, most of which are never going to see. Don't you think they'll attend to you, say pride on you, do his best for you? What I'm trying to do here is to get you to relax, to not be so preoccupied with getting, so you can respond to God's giving. People who don't know God and the way he works fuss over these things, but you know both God and how he works. See your life in God's reality. God appreciates it. God provisions. Don't worry about this now. You'll find all your everyday human concerns will be met. Give your entire attention to what God is doing right now, and don't get worked up about what may or may not happen tomorrow. God will help you deal with whatever hard things come up in the time of months. So we're not to worry about how we look or what we'll eat or wear tomorrow. So why do we? And now the microphone might be off. Why do we? What, get, try if you can to get behind, like think in your mind of a time that you've been anxious or something that makes you anxious and gets you right out. And then if you can, take a layer behind that and say, why? Why am I anxious about this? Why does that get, you know, my heart up to me? Why? Wait for them. Who's sleeping? Oh, who's sleeping? Who's sleeping? Go ahead.
Trust, you know, we fully trust God as well. And the other thing is, the circumstances that we're kind of out of control, you know, it's out of our control and what's going to happen. So there's three words that it's going to happen.
So if you like control, and you don't have it, you work. What else?
For me, it's partially the habit.
By habit, it's become a habit. When I used to worry a lot as a kid, and I had a really great model of a parent. My dad would say to me, "What are you worrying about?" And I'd say, "Well, no, no, no." He says, "Did your worry change anything?" And I'd say, "No, no." He says, "Maybe I'm thinking about using up all that energy." But if you didn't have a parent say something like that to you, right, it becomes a pattern.
So I was thinking about your question in that the origin of my worries happened because of my interactions or lack thereof with other people, not God. And I'm thinking that our worries, or at least my worries, how much money you make, if you're able to support your family, if you're able to walk out of the house in the morning, whatever your work, whatever my personal worries are centered around my interactions with people. However, if you really stop to think, and very rarely do we, about our interactions with God that are in essence more important, we shouldn't have any worries about those interactions.
Me, at the last time I was going through relationships, and I felt all the teachers were around relationships, and then I had relationships and moved overseas. And there's just such a different culture. Not so much emphasis is placed on the individual. And I feel like our individualism is a gift here. But I think that it's used in our society to make us feel like we have to be it. We have to be everything. We have to brand ourselves. We are the engineer of everything in our life. Rather than thinking of the larger group, we're depending on that. And I feel like there is less anxiety in some of these countries where we look down and say those people are so bad, and yet they have so much less anxiety than we do.
Others? Well, I'm not sure lots of times that we know what to do with our anxiety and our fear. The Bible instructs us, don't be afraid. But we aren't sure how to not be anxious and afraid
because our brain kind of makes up a whole new level of terror and pain for us that might not even exist. We make a very big mistake, though, if we don't learn how to hold our anxiety, how to transform our anxiety. So what happens with anxiety for most people is they feel anxious and they just want rid of it. I think what the scriptures teach us, and certainly what we're learning about anxiety, is it's trying to teach us something. And we need to hold it. We need to stay with it. Because fear is a very real enemy. And when we recognize it, we want it away rather than to deal with it. Anxiety is negative energy, and if we don't learn how to deal with it, it deals with us. If we don't know how to learn to deal with it, it deals with us. We breathe it over our lives, and it can consume us. It can suffocate relationships. It shrinks the world around us. It causes us to skew it onto others. And it is the very opposite of the love that God wants us. Let me say this way. Anxiety lumps safe and unsafe things in the world together and labels them all unsafe. So anxiety. I challenge you this morning that the very definition of spirituality, I'm going to say this like three times, so I'll show you why I'll hear it, that the very definition of spirituality is to be able to sit with pain. That the very definition of spirituality is to be able to sit with pain, to hold it, to embrace it, to try to understand it, to allow it to transform us. Everything in society says about anxiety we're supposed to do, get rid of it, project it onto somebody else or something else, or act like it isn't there. But your truest bet, test of spirituality, after it's best, is what do you do with your pain? What do you do with your pain? Because here's the question you should be asking when you're feeling this anxiety and you're feeling this pain and you're feeling this suffering. Here's the question you should be asking. What is this teaching you? What's going on that this is trying to break through for me and stay with it? Here are our two most common responses, and then I'm going to talk with you about the response that the scriptures are teaching us. The first is fight. People who fight their anxiety are generally loud aggressive, but not always. Their opinions are right. Why are they right? Because their opinions are right. They have control. The zealots who condemn and control, they create hate and reject and expel for all the right reasons in their mind. They have a lot of self-righteous rage. They are energized when you are a fighter when anxiety comes your way. You get energized because you are an enemy. Second most common response is flight. And people who hold flight as their response to anxiety and fear most commonly respond out of ignorance and ill information. They hold to a moral high ground at all costs, because by holding to moral high ground, what do they have? Control. Everything is black and white or right or wrong. They surround themselves with people who hold the same opinions that they do. And therefore, they flee conflict, because conflict creates. They try to keep their world safe. They live in denial and naivete often, and they like it that way because it helps them to feel safe. So people who flee anxiety basically try to create, you know, a safe cocoon within which they can live. The third way is the way that the passage that we just read talks about. It's the way of wisdom. And what it does is it names the anxiety, the fear, what's bringing the panic, and it addresses it. It seeks to talk through concerns instead of putting the other in a bad light because they don't think like us. Wisdom teaches us to see the pain and to learn how to process it, but more than that, it allows us to transform the pain. One of my very closest friends, if not my closest friend, suffers a great deal with anxiety. And she has tried everything. And she has finally found that the one way that she can most address anxiety is by holding. What am I anxious about? Why am I anxious about this? She works with the anxiety instead of against the anxiety. And while transformation is always a process that's confusing and can be dark and can be disorienting, the end game, if we're willing to hold it and be transformed by it, is that it takes you to a place where you can comfortably hold paradox. What's a paradox? Two things at the same time that appear to be contradictory, but in reality they both can be true. And they can help us when we need to weigh out the tendency to want to flee or fight and just sit with it and hold it and say, God, this is really making me anxious. What are you trying to teach me? Why am I so anxious? Why am I anxious? Let's take an example. Why am I so anxious about how I look? Well, maybe I'm afraid of rejection, right? It's trying to teach us something. Why are you afraid of rejection? I'll never reject you. God might say that's in our head. But I'm afraid people will, because people have. Well, why do you put so much weight on what people think? You see how if you stay with it and you keep talking it through, you can begin to transform you, and you can hold these things in tension. Yes, people might reject the way I look, but ultimately, God doesn't, and God matters more than people. You're holding these things in tension. If we don't transform the pain, the anxiety, the worry, we will transmit it. If we don't transform it, we will transmit it. This is a direct quote from Richard Rohr. The way of wisdom is beyond flight and beyond fight. And yet it is a certain sense includes both of them. It's fighting in a new way from within and fleeing from the quick egocentric response. Only God can hold such an act together within us, because our small self is always too small. Does this make sense? I mean, all you're shaking your head is, so it must be making sense to you. What if your sadness, your loneliness, your fear, and your anxiety are not mistakes? What if your anxiety, loneliness, fear are not mistakes? What if they are not obstacles on your path to happiness? What if they are the path? It's putting in what if that actually is the path, what it means to be human. The freedom you're longing for is not found in the eradication of it and getting rid of it and acting like it's not there and projecting it on other people, but actually the freedom is in the information that they carry. Your anxiety is being carried by you for a reason. It's informing you of something you need to look at, something you need to explore, something that is going on inside of you that is not good for you and healthy for you in the long run, so you got to deal with it. You need to transcend anything. You need not transcend anything here, but be willing to become deeply intimate with your lived and body experience. Nothing is missing. Nothing is out of place. Nothing need be sent away. You embrace it. You hold it. You deal with it. You talk it through. You get some help. But you don't treat it like the great thing. What if your anxiety is trying to teach you? Richard Rohr cautions, quote, "We dare not get rid of the pain before we have learned what it has to teach us. We dare not get rid of the pain before we have learned what it has to teach us. Fixing something doesn't usually transform us. We try to change events in order to avoid changing ourselves." We avoid God, who works in the darkness, where we are not in control. Maybe that is the secret, relinquishing control. We must learn to stay with the pain of life, with answers, without conclusions, and some days, without meaning. He comes to the table that is loaded with paradox. Whether that person that we're talking about